brand new arrival.
Things are getting hot in my county, let's put it that way.
I left my computer in here.
Oh, yeah, in your county.
I got half of it.
Well, welcome to the session of the Senate Interim Committee on Business and Transportation. Our purpose today, colleagues, is we're going to go over the LCs, that three of them that are proposed as committee bills, and others that members have had let Patrick know that they are introducing and are likely to come here. I suspect there will be more once we get into February, but this is what we think will come here, at least to start with now. What I'm going to do is ask people who have requested the bills, to very briefly, address so that we know what's in front of us. We're not going to take any testimony on the bills today. We'll wait until we get into session to do that, assuming, again, that they come here. So, okay. So, Patrick, you want to start us off?
Well, sure, Mr. Chair. I think the first one that we'll do will go mostly in order today. The first one will be LC 254, which deals with the length of terms for members of the Management Labor Advisory Committee. And speaking of that, we have Teresa Van Winkle from DCBS and also John Mullis, who is the co-chair of MLA.
You got your agency hat on today, John.
I do.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Teresa Van Winkle. I am the Senior Policy Advisor for the Department of Consumer Business Services. I also serve as the administrator for the what is officially known as the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, or what's commonly known as MLAC. LC 254 does one thing. Currently under statute, the MLAC member terms are set at 2 years, which run contrary to most of the boards, commissions, and advisory committees that are under the governor's confirmation process and Senate confirmation. So what this bill will do will change the terms from 2 years to 3 years. And that's
simple as that.
That's all it does. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Reason for that?
Well, the rationale for that is that since my time as the administrator for the committee and also the predecessor, as members have completed their terms, there seemed to have been this common theme of the members feeling comfortable in their duties, their statutory duties, in being the gatekeepers of the system right at the time of leaving. And there's also been some concerns from stakeholders as well about the turnover from the membership. So that's the catalyst behind
stability.
The bill introduction.
Any questions, Senator?
So are you saying that there's a learning curve to this and that it's nice to have people that actually know what they're voting on?
Vice Chair Gerard, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Wanted a little departure from the legislature.
Yeah.
All right, anything else? Well, great. Well, thank you. We look forward to the discussion on
and
this.
If I could just...
Sorry, John. You were sitting quietly there. I'm not used to that.
John Mullis with the Oregon Building Trades Council, but the hat that I'm wearing today is as one of 10 volunteer members of the Management Labor Advisory Committee. My successor is teed up to be confirmed next month. I've served my two terms, and really after 2 years, MLAC, or the workers' comp system, is a very complex system, and it is a steep learning curve, and I understand the need to refresh board members and to have some turnover, but there's also some value in institutional knowledge. And I think this moving it to 3 years so a person can serve 6 years will benefit the committee itself and the workers' comp system.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate the time you spent on it.
Sure.
Senator Monroe?
I agree with you, John. That's why I'm still here.
All righty, his morning is getting off well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Patrick, next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next one we have up is also one we are planning to introduce as a committee bill. It's LC 255 relating to public purpose charges for public utilities, and Jeff Bissonette from the Citizens Utility Board is going to give us a briefing on that one.
Welcome, Jeff.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonette with the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers of the state's regulated utilities. Just very briefly, we may have had some conversations with some of you in the last session about an issue that we're facing around resources to acquire energy efficiency from the industrial sector. And I'll kind of save the gory details for the session as to how we got there, but everybody sort of acknowledges it's a problem. We've been working for a solution, either administrative or legislative, for a couple of years now. We think we have a legislative solution that requires a change of policy of basically directing the PUC to go pursue all cost-effective efficiency sort of across customer classes. And so as we work on that, that has impacts on sort of other programs and other things. We're having kind of a wide-ranging conversation with a lot of the affected constituencies. I sort of wish we were having this conversation after tomorrow morning, because tomorrow morning we have all of the constituencies together kind of coming up with the final package. But after that point, it's my hope that once we hit the session, we're coming to you with a agreed upon approach to this issue, and we'll inform you when that happens.
This is in keeping with the Northwest Power Plan they just released. It said that we could meet most of the future needs through gains in energy efficiency, conservation.
That's right. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we don't leave any cost-effective efficiency on the table, because that would mean leaving money on the table and being forced to buy more expensive resources. And that's something that everybody wants to avoid, and that's what we're trying to do.
That'd be a good discussion. Okay. Senator Durant?
Yes, the question I have is, as you know, hydro has never been considered a green energy. And the improvements that they could do to hydro is with hydrogen technology. If this bill passes, will this open the door so that we can start getting some hydrogen technology in our hydro?
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, this discussion really doesn't touch on that. This discussion is, really around the use of ratepayer funds for specific investments that deal with energy efficiency. They could deal with small-scale renewables. So the issues that you're really talking about are under the renewable energy standard or renewable portfolio standard. I would hasten to say that hydro power is recognized as a recognized resource under that policy, and that policy also includes hydrogen in its purview. And you can thank Representative Gilliam for that. So it's an important question, but another topic.
You could conceivably, Jeff, I think it technically it might qualify. It depends on the cost size. There's a size issue.
And I will say whether it's cost effective. There are investments being made now for hydropower within irrigation districts and how to harness some of the water that's going through the pipes and that sort of thing to make sure, again, we're using all of our resources as effectively and efficiently as possible. So, yes, it definitely could include that, and it is recognized as a resource that currently gets ratepayer investments, both on the large scale in terms of efficiency and the small scale in terms of both efficiency and resources.
The answer, I think, to your question is potentially.
There are amendments.
Any other questions, Jeff? Thank you. We look forward to that discussion.
Thank you.
Hopefully you'll have everybody on board.
Amen.
Patrick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The third one we'll go to is a little out of order because we're waiting for somebody to come for the one that was up third on the agenda. So I think we'll skip to LC 80. LC 80 as my understanding, is Senator Monroe's concept that she's planning to introduce as a member bill. To speak to today, we have Aaron Deese from TriMet. It deals with electronic transit fare collection systems, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe, did you want to do any introduction?
Yeah, I introduced this bill for TriMet. It passed the House last session, I think unanimously, and somehow got waylaid when it got over to the Senate late in the session. And it just makes a lot of sense. We're trying to make it easier for people to pay and you know, their fare when they get on a TriMet bus or a train. And this measure simply says that if they buy one of these cards that has a certain amount of money on it and they don't use it right away, that it would be retained and would not be kicked back to the government like some other cards are. And Aaron can talk to you about it or answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Girod. I've spoken with you, I think, all within the last couple weeks on this bill, and when you heard it last session, it's the same bill that was introduced last session. I think Senator Monroe hit most of the points. The key point is that our e-fare system is coming online in 2017, and we're looking ahead to see some of the problems, and one of the problems is this unclaimed property statute in which funds that remain in a transit account after 3 years would have to be sent back to the state. We would have to close the account and send it to the Division of State Lands. These will be most likely many small increments of dollars, cents, you know, $4 maybe. And TriMet's plan to this point is to do something that's similar to what the state does, in which we contact the writer when we have contact information and say, you have money on your account. Would you like to keep your account functioning, or would you like a refund? How would you like to deal with this? The end result, though, is that when people don't respond, we would like to keep the funding in transit where people originally spent the money. So if you have any questions, concerns.
Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The problem with this, as I see it, is that people already have a way to get their funds from cards that they use and from other expired accounts. All accounts that anyone has in the state after a certain period of unuse are escheated to the state. That is, the money is sent to the state. It's kept for the people who have spent it and have not used it. This one would be a bit different in that if someone comes to the State Lands Division where you go to find your escheated funds, it wouldn't show up. It wouldn't be there. And so this is money that people spend and didn't use, and they wouldn't be able to necessarily be able to find it. Now, the district says they're going to help them find it. There's already a method for that. We don't need that. This is just going to keep it sitting in their funds as opposed to putting it where it belongs.
All right. Well, we'll have plenty of time in a couple of weeks to have these discussions. Senator Girod?
Yeah, I just let the committee know I have a meeting with Ledge Council to discuss the ins and outs of this bill. I still think it's just a giant carve-out for really bad legislation. And if you want to pass bills like this, then if it impacts your district poorly, then by God, you should be able to stand by your decision. And so that's pretty much where I sit.
I think you're talking about prior legislation.
Yeah, prior legislation. Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Any others? I just have one curiosity question. You said that you're about to implement your e-ticketing system.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different than what I have on my phone already? I usually have about $10 in there to be able, so I've got it if I happen to want to jump
Certainly.
On it.
It will be in conjunction with that. You'll actually have a card that taps onto a system, and you'll have an online account that you can add money via your phone or via a computer or a terminal that will allow you just to tap onto the system as you get on. This one is more like having a paper ticket, except now it's an e-ticket on your phone. So you will have
a... So I will have to have a card?
If you like your using your phone, you may use that.
Oh, you can use your phone.
Yes.
Let's see, all I need is another card.
We're happy to oblige.
All righty. Anything else on this one? Well, this one will be a fun discussion. Thank you, Aaron. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next one we have up is another member bill. It's LC95, Community Solar Projects. And the person I have down on here doing that one is Lee Byers.
That would
Senator
be me.
Byers.
Yes. Okay. Well, I don't have anybody else. Colleagues, you'll remember last session we talked about the community solar projects a lot and could not get people to an agreement on what to do. We did pass a bill that directed the PUC to study the issue and bring us back recommendations on the best way to do that by November, which they did. I've had a bill drafted, working, frankly, across the other end of the building with Representative Hovey, and that one is online. Essentially what it does is it allows people who don't have the right roof shape or they're renters or something else, the opportunity to buy into a solar project and have that credited against their bill, much in the same way that you can do now as an individual if you put them on your own house. In my opinion, from experience, that's a better way to do things. It doesn't take away folks' option to do one individually, but it does allow better projects and could be put together by the utility or could be put together by third parties. Doesn't specify. It's pretty permissive in how things will be structured. The bill or the LC that you have is in for a few little tweaks. Didn't quite come out the way we thought it would in the first draft, but it'll be an interesting discussion when we get there. Happy to answer any questions you might have at this point on that.
Are these mainly for the areas that have the home boards and all those things?
Homeowners Association. It could be. It doesn't require. Doesn't. It's not a requirement.
Okay.
As an example in that, you could have somebody who is in a homeowners association, like we talked about the last time, that association doesn't allow them to put one on their roof,
right,
but they could buy into a project someplace else
and
get the credit. Anything else? Okay, well, that's that one. Next up, Patrick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next one up is LC-235. It's also a bill that you're introducing dealing with annexation and urban reserve designation. The folks I have that are lined up to testify are Dave Hunnicutt, John Chandler, Roger Martin, and Ralph Saperstein, and I see three of them here.
I think Mr. Saperstein has pulled his piece. Well, I don't know. Ralph, did you want to talk about it? I think you're doing a different bill, right? No? Okay, we'll leave that up. This is, colleagues, just as a brief introduction, I had a number of people approach us to do a bill on land use, different little small elements of it. And so what I did was say, okay, we will put it in one bill, make it an omnibus land use bill, and they will defend their own section of this and see if we can get support or not. So we'll start off with Mr. Chandler, Mr. Hunnicutt. Yeah. I should say, it started off with, I think it was four pieces, and we're down to two now.
Excellent.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Dave Hunnicutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking on sections 1 and 2 of this bill. The bill is at this point somewhat of a Frankenstein's monster. We're trying to un-Frankenstein it through amendments. So we hope to be introducing amendments to the bill. The sections that we care about, sections 1 and 2, deal with voter annexation. There are quite a few cities in Oregon, and approximately 35, that have voter annexation requirements. And when you have a city with a voter annexation requirement, it runs head first into Oregon's land use planning system and creates a huge disconnect. The situation occurs when land is brought inside the urban growth boundary and you have the multiple years worth of hearings to bring land inside the urban growth boundary. Once land is brought into the urban growth boundary, it's deemed at that point to be urban, and under our land use planning system is designed for urban level development. Metro makes plans, cities make plans to develop that property as part of the their city. When the land is brought in, typically it's rural land. It's not part of the city. And in order to provide the services that you need, the infrastructure that you need to develop that property, it needs to annex into the city. There are a number of cities, as I indicated, that have charter amendments that require that land before it's brought into the city in order to receive the services to go to a vote, to an annexation vote, and that's where you have the disconnect. There is typically some significant pressure from folks to vote no to keep that land outside of the city, and since it can't annex in, then it can't receive the services and it can't develop, which is contrary to why the whole purpose for bringing it into the boundary in the first place, and it causes a breakdown in the land use planning system. There, in November, there was a vote in Sherwood. Sherwood has voter annexation, 104 acres. Sherwood City Council has tried to bring it in three times. It's been voted down three times. That land is necessary for residential development. Sherwood is growing. Metro brought it in 2002. It's been there for 13 years, and it can't develop because it can't be because the voters keep turning it down. I'll leave you with this bill will fix that, by the way, and say if 100% of the property owners want to, they're inside the boundary, they're outside the city limits, if they want to come in and annex in and they meet all the city requirements, then the city brings them in without sending it to a vote of the public. So that's what the bill does. I'll leave you with that's what our sections of the bill do. I'll leave you with an editorial opinion piece from the Portland Tribune that I think really hits the nail on the head and talks about the Sherwood vote and why Sherwood's vote matters. The key sentence in that opinion article is, our 40-year land use management experiment is unraveling. And that's exactly what the voter annexation requirements do. It's why we're trying to fix it. Mr. Chandler and I have been in this building for a long time. This is one of the few times where we're actually trying to help the existing land use system.
We'd appreciate it if you wouldn't tell me about it.
Yeah. So we're hoping to see this bill pass. It's been a long battle, and it's time to change voter annexation.
Thank you, Dave. Anything to add, John?
Just a quick bit of context, Mr. Chair, member of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. Oregon's land use law was adopted in 1973 when Moses come down from Mount Sinai with Senate Bill 100 under his arm. The first problem with annexation as it relates to the Oregon land use system happened in 1978. So this is an old, old problem. There was a couple of court cases, one out of Supreme Court case out of Klamath Falls, one out of Corvallis. The Corvallis case is really the problematic one, where the Oregon Supreme Court, in a sort of argument that only fools attorneys, found a distinction between the land use piece of annexation, which is subject to Senate Bill 100 and all the rules and regulations, and the non-land use piece, which goes to the voter. And that disconnect has plagued us ever since. This causes immense disruption in our system, because you have land, like Mr. Honeycutt said, it's legally presumed available for urban development that you can't develop because you can't get water and sewer. There's a piece of property in the metropolitan area that has literally, not in the same ownership, but has literally been inside the urban growth boundary since the urban growth boundary was drawn in 1981. And it has not developed, cannot develop, because it's outside a city with annexation voting. And the voters, for whatever set of reasons, simply say no thank you. And that's why we're here. This is we think this is a very important bill. It is going to be controversial. Some of you represent districts that have annexation voting. There's going to be people that don't like having their right to vote on things taken away. We get that. And we're trying to narrow it as closely as we can to make it clear that the city still gets to make the decision. We're not taking away the power of the local electeds. We're not saying it has, anything has to happen. All the property owners have to agree. The city code and standards and rules and regulations, everything else have to be met. But this, we believe, is a way to make sure the land use system and the property annexation and infrastructure delivery system remain in sync and don't cause, especially now when housing prices are going through the roof anyway, we need all the land that's available for development to be able to get to that stage as quickly as we can. We appreciate your consideration. We have no opinion collectively or individually on anything past Section 2, other than ought not be in this bill.
Senator Drake.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern in this building about the cost of housing.
I've heard that.
You haven't heard that? This appears to me to be increasing supply and therefore would have the effect of decreasing the cost of housing. Is that kind of...
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerard, absolutely right. And it's probably not nearly as linear as I would like, but absolutely, if you have land that is supposed to be developed, two things happen. It's supposed to be developed, so it can't... You can't add, even though it can't come, be developed because of annexation voting, the local government cannot go add other land. Metro or the city cannot add other land, recognizing this one's not going to happen because legally it's supposed to have it happen. So you artificially constrain the supply even further than the boundary does in the first place. And absolutely, I can tell you, between Mr. Honeycutt and myself, could probably give you 15 or 20 examples of projects that would go forward right away if they could get annexed. So yes, it would increase supply dramatically.
It would have been an interesting discussion. One would think that under our land use system, if communities wanted to have that vote, maybe they should be voting on the land use plan before it's submitted.
If that fits within the relating clause, Mr. Chairman, that might not be a bad amendment, but we'll take that.
That would make your life even worse.
Thinking out loud.
Anything else?
I spent 12 years wandering in that wilderness called Metro. And Metro is required by state law to have a 20-year land supply for housing. So Metro expands the urban growth boundary necessarily to accommodate that law. And yet the current city ordinances that require a vote on all annexations kind of thwarts.
Yes.
Metro's ability to actually follow the law. So I think you're getting at something that is a real problem and that really needs to be addressed, and I'll be looking forward to working on it.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, gentlemen.
You.
Do we have anybody? Let's see. There was two other pieces that will be withdrawn from the bill before it's introduced. There's another piece, isn't there?
I was under.
That's all you had?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
That's it then. Okay. What's next?
So the next and the last one we have is LC 257, which will be the third of our committee LC drafts. It's got two parts to it. The first part, I'm not sure if Mr. McElway from the Port of Hood River is here yet. He was going to be coming in late, so maybe we could start with the second half of that bill. Bernie Bottomley from TriMet is going to come talk to the second part of that measure. He's right there.
Mr. Bottomley, it's been a while.
It has been a while. Good to be back.
Welcome.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, Bernie Bottomley, Public Policy at TriMet. I'd like to speak to Section 4 of the LC. What this does is it modestly changes, increases TriMet's ability to spend resources that it receives through grants or other outside input on projects that are part of what we define and the statute defines as the secondary transit system, which are roads and other transportation facilities such as bike paths and sidewalks that the system doesn't actually run on or that run parallel to the system. Increasingly, as we build larger projects like light rail systems or bus rapid transit, which Senator Beyer, you're very familiar with, the community is asking us, in conjunction with those projects, to make additional improvements to the overall transportation system that are not necessarily exactly adjacent to the project that we're building, but that improve the overall multimodal system. So this language would give us the ability ability to use grant funds that could become available to us to address those needs that are not currently defined as part of the primary transit system. The language is a little bit longer than we had originally intended, but LC wanted to clean up some inartful drafting from an ancient piece of legislation that none of you were, perhaps Senator Monroe,
right.
Might
have.
They have a tendency to take those opportunities to fix things.
Yes, exactly. So it's fairly straightforward. It just gives us the authority to use outside grant funds. It's not our general fund that would be put into these projects, but it would be funds that we receive through grants or through bond measures that we could then use for these purposes. So happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, this is really important in my district. Much of my district, what used to be called Mid-County or East County, Multnomah County, doesn't have appropriate sidewalks and so on. If we're doing a transit line through that property with stops, people need to be able to get safely to and from those stops. So sidewalk improvements and so on, crosswalks and so on. Are appropriate and needed, and this change would allow that to happen.
My understanding is it's just permissive legislation. It doesn't
it's
say you're going to do anything.
It doesn't require.
Just says if you find a way to do it, this would be allowable.
About to.
Senator Ryan.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that you won't use any of your operating funds that are normal operating funds, but only other funds that you happen to come by.
Yes, right. Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, that's correct. The language is written in such a way that the only funds that we could use for these expanded purposes are funds other than our general fund.
Okay, any other questions? Another one, there'll be an interesting discussion.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I think Patrick is trying to find the other sponsor of the other element of the bill, and we'll give him a minute to do that. Take a breather. Anybody else got anything?
I just got a note that said they probably pull that.
What?
I just got a note from one of their lobbyists that said they're probably going to go the administrative route.
Okay.
So, Patrick was out.
I'll wait for Patrick to get back. And
I think he was just confirming that.
Let's stand at ease for a minute. I'd like to open a work session for the purpose of introducing legislative concepts for bills. Again, starting out is a normal disclaimer on that. The vote to introduce is not a commitment that you'll support. It's just merely starting the process in place. And with that, I would turn to the vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the following LC drafts be introduced as committee bills. LC 254, dated 1/5/16. LC 255, dated 12/31/15. LC 257, dated 1/12/16.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Girard has moved that LCs 254, 255, and 257 be introduced as committee bills. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. It passes. The bills are submitted for introduction. Let's see. Patrick, anything else?
Nothing else that we need to discuss on the record, Mr. Chair. See you in February.
In February. So, gentlemen, have a good day, and we'll take these up and have some interesting meetings in February. Maybe we'll take these up. We're assuming we're going to get them. We're adjourned. We'll take these up. We're assuming we're going to get them. We're adjourned. Maybe.